Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Phil Alexander to the show. He is an internet security and data privacy expert. I think this is an area of survival and prudence in our life that is very much overlooked by most people. And I'm glad that we have him here to tell us what to do and things we should be aware of today. Phil, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, Jason. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, likewise. Great to have you. So what are some of the biggest challenges people are facing in the world of internet security and privacy?
Well, it's just that there's so much data out there, and especially with the internet, on the plus side, it's a tremendous access to information, but it needs to be used with due care because it does, you know, expose people to dangers of identity theft, credit card theft, and of course, as a parent myself, you know, I want to make sure my kids are safe online.
And so what are some of the things that people are really, really doing wrong, like some of the big, egregious problems that can probably be easily fixed, I bet?
Right. There are a lot of things you can do without necessarily being, you know, a computer expert or an IT expert. For example, you know, a common one, what I call scammers, they'll send you emails saying there's a problem with, say, your online banking account, and your account will be frozen. Please send us your username and password to resolve this issue.
But nobody really, does anybody really fall for that? And I've had that email.
Right.
And I think, Phil, it came right after the email about the person trying to get the money out of Nigeria.
Right, that was a Nigerian attack.
Yeah.
Well, but from a risk, you know, from the scammer's point of view, if I send out 10,000 emails, which doesn't cost me anything, if I only get 1% back, I can still get a certain amount of fraud.
It's amazing, though, that even that anybody is that dumb. That's just scary, isn't it?
You know, it is. And unfortunately, there are a lot of, you know, people who, like you said, you're right, that particular, what's called a phishing attack has been around for a long time, and there are still people that fall victim to it.
I think one of the ways that people could fall really pretty easily is they sometimes, if they're good phishers, they create the air of legitimacy because there will be a link in the email that takes you to a site. So if you bank with Bank of America, for example, it'll take you to a site that looks like Bank of America's site. But if you don't actually look at the URL in the address bar, you could mistakenly put your password into this fake banking website, right?
Right. I mean, the scammers have gotten very clever. You're right. You'll click on the link. It takes you, I mean, I'll stick with your example of Bank of America. And the website will mimic Bank of America very closely. And the only difference will be when you actually enter a username and password and hit enter or send, it sends it to the scammer site and not to legitimate Bank of America. You know, no bank's going to ask you to email them your username and password. And, you know, if you're not sure the email's legitimate, just call your bank or go into a local branch.
Okay, so phishing attacks. And there are probably, do you want to mention any other types of phishing attacks?
Right, there's one, it's actually labeled the granny phishing attack. And what is, they'll call seniors with grandkids saying, you know, your grandchild is in trouble, say, and, you know, got in trouble south of the border in Mexico. And, you know, they need $1,500 to get out of jail. And there's a processing fee of $100 for us to do that. Well, that's now a granny phishing attack that's been labeled. You know, if you get that kind of call, my advice is not to do that. And then, you know, make the calls to your family to, you know, to see if your grandchild really is, you know, in some kind of trouble and respond that way. And not just from that kind of, you know, what's called a granny phishing attack.
Right, right. So do you want to move on to another subject beyond phishing? I mean, I'm still,
sure,
boggles the mind that people really fall for that stuff, but it happens. They only need a few people, right?
Yeah. What's all like online credit card, online shopping? I mean, it's January now. We just got through the, what we call the Christmas buying season. And, you know, a lot of people, myself included, you know, did a fair amount of purchasing of items online. And, you know, there's a risk there because, you know, a lot of times you'll purchase an item with either a credit card or a debit card. The safety of your credit or debit card is specifically tied to how secure that online company protects the data. You know, if their protection, you know, security posture is weak, your data is at risk. One of the things I recommend, you know, instead of a credit card or a debit card, consider using a gift card. You know, if I use a $100 gift card and buy something for $75, the only risk out there is the $20 still left on it and not, you know, my whole credit card or my whole debit card.
I just had some credit card fraud again. I've had it a few times on my last statement. Someone put $221 on my credit card at a merchant I didn't recognize and don't shop at. So, but the nice thing is with a credit card, see, I think the debit cards are very dangerous. I don't like debit cards at all. But the credit card, you're not liable for it. I think technically you're liable for $50, but I've never been held liable at least.
So. Right. You're absolutely correct. By law, you're liable for $50, but most will, you know, if you can prove that it was in fact a fraudulent charge, it will give you back all your money. But you touched on something very important, the need to check your statements. And if you don't recognize a charge, call the company. If it's legitimate, they'll have a record of the purchase, and they can send you the receipt. And if I could real quick, you're also very correct that a debit card can even be more dangerous because it generally comes out of, say, your checking account. So not only can the scammer get your money, but you also risk bouncing checks. So checks you're writing for legitimate bills could be, and you can be figured bounce check fees on top of everything else.
Okay, so using a gift card rather than a credit card, and certain, now, do you agree with me that debit cards are more dangerous than credit cards?
Well, I do, like I said, because in addition to the financial loss, you're also looking at bounce check, you know, fees, and could potentially even hit your credit score. So yeah, there's even more risk with debit cards. Well, as far as like online shopping, it depends on, you know. I also ask, look at what data the online realtor has asked you to provide. Now, a certain amount of data is necessary. For example, where do you want it shipped to? Now, but if they say, you know, if Amazon, which they don't do, they're a very reputable online company. You know, an online company doesn't need, for example, your Social Security number just to make an online purchase. You know, Social Security numbers are very risky, can lead to identity theft. So don't provide elements, you know, pieces of information about yourself that aren't specifically necessary. In fact, one of the features that like Walmart has, for example, they have what's called a ship to store, where you don't even need to send them your home address to ship it to. You can ship it to a local store and just pick up the item there.
Right. Apple has that too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's probably a lot of fraud in that ship to store stuff because someone can go and somehow hack your account, have stuff shipped to the store, pick it up. It's already been paid for as far as the store is concerned. And you've basically paid for what they just purchased, right? Is that what you're going
to
say?
Well, you still need to be careful, right? You, like I said, if someone gets, you know, can hack your account or can get to your credit card, you know, they can shop as you, get shipped to the store, shipped to their address. So, you know, protecting your data is everyone's responsibility to be diligent about their data.
Let's talk about hacking accounts for a moment, if we can. I remember when Sarah Palin was the VP nominee, someone hacked her Gmail account, and it was in the news.
Right.
And I get spam emails from friends and people in my address book that's obvious their account has been hacked. They would never send me that email. I know that. And, you know, I always tell them, and I also see that on Facebook as well, that, you know, where it's obvious someone's Facebook account has been hacked. There are programs out there that can go and try to log into a website and they basically just guess passwords, right? And I've heard that these programs, I mean, it is insane how quickly they work. And the websites must have some safeguards, which I'm sure you're going to talk about.
Right.
But I've heard that these programs can, and I don't remember the exact number, so forgive me, but it's a huge number, that they can guess, like, within a couple of minutes, it can run millions of password combinations and try to guess
right.
a password.
Right. What you're talking about is like a dictionary attack or a brute force attack. And you're right. You know, with modern computers, they can, you know, very quickly go through tens of thousands of potential password combinations. You know, that's why, you know, a way to, you know, help prevent that is after, say, 3 to 5 invalid password attempts, lock out the account and then send a reset to your, you know, email address that you've registered before. But you brought up another important point. You know, a lot of free internet-based email accounts or even social networking sites, you're not in charge, you know, you, the user, you're not in charge of the security. Or it's not like a major corporation has an internal email account where they are in charge of the security. It's basically the internet company that's in charge of security. And you don't know what their posture is. You don't know if they're going to lock out your account after a failed attempt. You don't know if they enforce any kind of password complexity. You know, could my password be 12345? Could the password be my first name? I don't, you know, probably in some sites you could, and you're right, it wouldn't be very hard to hack it.
So what do we do about that? How do we protect ourselves? I mean, we can't control, you know, all of the websites we like to use and what they do. What do we do?
One thing, you brought up an important point. Even if it comes, you know, if you get an email even from someone you know, but it's out of character for what they do, check with them. And what I do, say if I have, you know, like a Hotmail or a Yahoo account, I'm still going to use a complex, you know, what I consider a hard-to-guess password. And I'm not going to, because it's an internet-based account, I'm not going to put things in there that are sensitive. You know, I'm not going to, you know, start discussing, you know, extremely personal things there. I'm not going to be, you know, talking about my financial information with my wife, you know, through a Hotmail account or Yahoo account, just because, you know, I don't control the security of those accounts. So I'm not going to put data that I consider very sensitive there.
Yeah, so obviously be careful. Don't put sensitive data. But do you have any recommendations on which companies are maybe better than others, you know, or is there a website that can... The problem is, I don't know if you could even keep a list like that because it's a moving target. The companies are changing their policies all the time, I'm sure.
Well, and that's one of the challenges is companies are changing their policies all the time. I take a very cautious eye to free internet email from any provider, even the well-known ones. You know, going back to the online shopping, not only am I, you know, do I exercise due diligence there, but I try to stick with very well-known companies that are mature and who want to defend their reputation, so we'll have a certain level of security that's in their own best interest, versus, you know, an unknown site that, you know, I have even less, you know, less of a good feel that they have a strong security posture.
All right. What else would you like to cover?
Well, once we talked about was knowing what your kids are doing online
mm-hmm.
as parents.
Yeah, good point.
You know, one of the things I tell people, ignorance is not bliss here. You know, who are your kids chatting with, you know, online? Who are they emailing? Do you know who they're texting? Do you know what social media sites they're on? Do you know if your son or daughter has a Twitter account or a Facebook account? Do you know who their friends are online? You know, if you don't, you really should. You know, are they being, you know, bullied online? Or, you know, I guess it's hard, you know, being my kid because, you know, I'm one of the parents because of the business I'm in. I know more about computers than even my teenage son does. You know, so as a parent, you know, be involved and, you know, monitor who they're emailing, who they're texting, who they're chatting. And I tell them, you know, under no circumstances let your minor child friend someone who they only know online. And, you know, I never agree to meet someone, you know, especially as a child, never agree to meet someone in real life that they've only met online.
Oh, yeah. Very scary, of course. I guess Facebook, I believe their policy is anybody over 13 is allowed to have a Facebook membership. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
It's really, I mean, what a Pandora's box. I mean, most people don't have enough time to monitor their own voicemails, emails, text messages, and social media, much less their children's. And I mean, there so much damage can be done so quickly. I mean, how do you do that?
like I said, it's, you know, it can be a lot of work. And, you know, you brought up another interesting point. You said, and you're right, but there's little bots. I certify I'm over 13.
Yeah, who cares?
Right.
I've always thought those things were funny. Like, you go to an alcohol website. Yeah, I'm over 21.
Right. You know, at least when I was a kid and I tried to walk into a bar, I had to have an ID with me
right, to
get into the bar. And now, I mean, if I say, yeah, I'm over 13, or depending on the site, yeah, I'm over 18. But there's, you know, they don't check. They don't have to enter in some kind of verification to prove. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of 9-year-old kids with their Facebook accounts.
Scary stuff, definitely. But I assume those children accounts are set up by the parents and they offer some degree of control that maybe the general public hopefully can't see your kid's profile. And maybe parents have to approve all friend requests or something like that would be a good idea.
No, absolutely. I tell my, you know, for my son, you know, I'm in charge. And what he can do on Facebook, I don't want, you know, at least at this point, this is, you know, my personal preference as a parent, that right now I don't want him on Twitter. I'm not saying that all parents do that, but that's in the Alexander household. And watch, you know, and watch his etiquette. Don't email someone or text someone or post something online that you wouldn't talk face-to-face, like to a parent or to your teacher if you're, you know, as a student. Don't get, quote-unquote, vulgar or disrespectful just because, wow, it's only an email, or I'm only posting it online, so it doesn't matter. Well, yeah, it does.
Yeah, there's a person behind that that sees that, and there may be there may be consequences. They may get back at you, so you got to be careful, yeah.
Absolutely.
I got to tell you personally, I just hate bullies. I mean, I just despise the concept of bullying. It is so nasty. And I remember hearing about that case a couple of years ago, how this teenage girl, I believe it was bullied by a parent posing as one of her peers, I don't want to say friends, that did all kinds of mean things. And I believe she ended up committing suicide. I mean, what a tragic, tragic story.
It's a heart-wrenching story. You're referring to, it was a young girl named Megan Meyer. And
that's maybe we need another Megan's Law.
Yeah, perhaps we do. Because it was basically a mom of someone who Megan had a falling out with was posing as a 16-year-old boy named Josh Evans. And so they were having this friendship online, and the quote-unquote Josh Evans broke up with Megan, and the poor girl wound up committing suicide. It's a tragedy. One thing that I tell people, not only, you know, through Data Privacy Network, but like I said, in the community, just as a parent, you know, if you see cyberbullying, stop. Don't respond. Don't hit reply. Your response is to tell your mom and dad, this is what's going on. And ignore it. And let your parents respond accordingly. You know, does it rise to the level, say, to notify authorities or not, but in no circumstances start getting into an online battle with a cyberbully. If you see it as a child, tell your parents. You know, I tell my kid there is nothing, I mean nothing, that he can't bring to my attention. I'm here for him no matter what. And that includes if something bad happens online, you come to dad and I'm here for you 100%.
Anything else on bullying that you want to say? Any other tips or anything?
Well, I would say, and you know, and the opposite's true too. Like I said earlier, you know, etiquette works both ways. Don't respond to cyberbullying, you know, and don't be a bully yourself. Watch your etiquette in your conversation with people, and that includes your online electronic conversations as well.
Yeah, good point. Anything else that people should know about the privacy and, you know, online security?
Yeah, I would just say, like, on your computers itself, you know, depending on your program, keep it up to date with, you know, simple things like patching and antivirus, and they have spam filtering. Just like if, like, this time of year, you know, we encourage people to get a flu shot so you don't get the flu virus. Well, keep your computer healthy. Well, can help it from getting viruses, and sometimes those viruses steal information. So if, you know, more robust computer, more up-to-date computer will help protect it and then yourself from, you know, attacks that may lead to data loss.
Are you a Mac or a PC user?
Actually, I use both.
Which one do you prefer?
From an ease of use, more of a Mac.
So I asked you that because I wanted to know where you're coming from before this next question. And you know, maybe we can just kind of wrap up with this. But yeah, and I'm a Mac user, by the way, just so you know where I'm coming from. But I use PCs for many years, and I like the Macs better. But if you talk to Apple, they seem to think that a Mac never gets a virus. And I think they're just towing the company line. I think it's ridiculous. Any computer can get a virus. But in the broader scheme of things, I mean, are Macs more secure? Probably are, right?
Right. Macs are more secure. But I agree with you. No computer is 100% virus proof. You know, I believe for the longest time, I do believe they have a more robust operating system. But I think, quite frankly, especially in years past, the reason there were less viruses attacking Macs because there were less Macs out there. now as they're grabbing a larger portion of the market share,
they become a bigger target
for the bad guys.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. No question about it. Yeah, well, good stuff. Well, hey, give out your website and tell people where they can learn more.
Sure. Well, they can look at my website at www.dataprivacynetwork.com. I have a lot of good information there, some informational articles, and there's also a form how to contact Data Privacy Network and me directly if they'd like to do so.
And are you located in Phoenix? I noticed your area code.
Yes, I am located in Phoenix, Arizona.
Fantastic. Well, so am I. Well, good stuff, Phil. Hey, thanks for joining us today. And everybody out there, don't neglect this area of your life. It deserves some attention. There's some pretty easy things you can do and save yourself a lot of potential aggravation in the future.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.